You're listening to a 3CR podcast recorded in the 3CR Community Radio Studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you like what you hear, please consider donating or subscribing so we can keep bringing you more independent community content. For more information, go to 3cr.org.au.
Hi, I'm Kim Salmon. I'd like to have a quick word about public radio, particularly 3CR. The thing about public radio is that it's more open than the more formatted types of radio to what's going on around it. So when you listen to it, you're more likely to hear a reflection of real life. And 3CR, being in the heart of Smith Street, Collingwood, is a particularly good example of what I'm talking about. If you'd like to subscribe, the number is 94198377.
You've been listening to the same.
In an overheated world, in increasingly atomized societies, bicycles can be the magic bullet. Cycling is going to help us combat this climate crisis. Cycling is going to help us live healthier lives. Cycling is going to give the poorest in society an affordable means of transport and open up cities in a way we can't yet imagine. And that's from Jonathan Liu in 2024.
Well, we know where we're going, but we don't know where we've been. And we know what we're knowing, but we can't say what we've seen. And we're not little children, and we know what we want, and the future is certain. Give us time to work it out.
Alrighty, I've had enough time to work it out, and I realise I am on the road to nowhere. You're listening to the Yarrabug Radio Show here on Radical Radio 3CR. First up, many thanks to Naomi Chafin, Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! Well into their 31st year. Good to see them breaking the habit.
Youngsters.
Hey.
Youngsters.
Come on. You know you've got a bias against youth. You've got to be careful now. They'll be gathering in gangs in public spaces and demanding action on things. We've got a bit of a show coming up today. We're going to have, well, if anybody's looked at it, and I encourage you to, we're going to have a look at Victoria's active transport plan with the looking into the future 2030, most of the things, but we'll dive into that. We'll have a couple of news items to kick ourselves along, and hopefully that'll be enough for the show. Faith,
morning.
Say good morning, and very good morning. Actually, it's a lovely Melbourne morning.
It was gorgeous.
Yeah. Sunshine. A waning crescent moon still high in the sky.
Nice.
Very nice, actually. And I, for once, actually left home without a bike moment this morning. So
did you accrue one on the way?
Well, I actually did. Through close observation. When one fell by the wayside, another one stepped up. Got the first four traffic lights green, got the green wave, got every red light afterwards. Hey, look, just the one thing, and I must admit, I've seen it happen a couple of times, but I'm not really 100% sure on it. I had a pedestrian nearly step out in front of me on Clarendon Street in East Melbourne. So it's, for those who know, it's parked cars, lovely wide bike lane. Oh, no, there's probably a 600mm painted gap between the parked car and the start of the bike lane, very wide bike lane, then another 500 to 600mm painted out before it gets to the traffic. And like a lot of those streets, there are, I think there's three or four speed humps in the bit that I go, and there's one pedestrian crossing. And look, I hate to say, you know, our excuse is education. This pedestrian, obviously confused the pedestrian crossing for the speed hump and just stepped straight out. And, I mean, the pedestrian crossing was only 50 metres away. But I realised now how easily that mistake could happen.
It happens a bit because the speed humps have those white lines on the sides.
Yeah.
You know, I think pedestrians should be able to cross the road wherever they want, and if you're on the road, it's you just look out for them.
Yep. In the world of vulnerability, they are the most vulnerable.
And 50 metres is, well, if you're going there and back cause, to a crossing because it's not in the direction you want to travel, that's a big detour. It's,
And if we're going to talk about strategic planning for active transport, we shouldn't be trying to corridor it into one spot, should we?
No.
Val, stop asking obvious questions. Stop leading the witness. What about yourself, Faith?
My bike moment. I had a series of really wonderful bike moments yesterday.
Oh, cool.
I don't know if anyone remembers, but last year, Marybeck Council commissioned some amazing artwork to celebrate the Wheel Sisters program. Three large, almost life-size sculptures of women on bikes and a series of posters. And we had, they were installed near the shared path near Glenroy Station where a lot of the Wheel Sisters live and ride. So recently those sculptures and artwork made their way over to Faulkner where another really significant number of Wheel Sisters come from. And were installed on one of the really busy shared paths in Faulkner that a lot of people on bikes use to get to the library, the swimming pool, different community centres, and to move through away from roads. And we had a Mother's Day event yesterday because one of the main motivations for women who learn to ride as part of the Wheel Sisters program is that they want to be able to ride so that they ride with their kids. It's really common that their kids can ride, potentially even their husband. But where they grow up, it wasn't normal for girls and women to ride. So that was really cool. We had amazing food and music and Dr. Crankies was there doing free bike checks and we were able to get some bikes together for some of the kids who needed them and just a really nice morning celebrating. But lovely to see so many women out bringing their families and to all gather around what riding a bike brings to them as a mother.
That's interesting.
It was a really nice day, It's a bit of a, I mean, it's the same as with women everywhere. Like being a mother was one of their main motivations to learn to ride. They want to ride with their kids. They know it makes them healthier. It's modelling good behaviour, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
But being a mother was also one of the most significant reasons they can't ride very often.
Yeah.
It's that double-edged sword.
I read it must have been in The Guardian, an interesting article on somebody doing bike skills training out at Wilsey.
Well, and just in full disclosure, one of the companies mentioned in that article is mine.
Oh, there we go. pick up on it.
No.
This Val skim reading is not very good. But what reason why I mention it, because there was a participant in one of those lessons that brought up the very fact that her daughter could ride, but she couldn't.
Mm.
You know, and that's what drove her to learn how to ride.
Yeah.
All righty. We start the news now.
Start the news.
Listen, tomorrow night is Tuesday night. The Yarra Council meeting to push the Wellington Street extension comes up for council discussion vote tomorrow. So if you're interested, you can still get along. You can live stream it. It's obviously a bit late to make a submission, I would expect.
Well, you can register up until 6 p.m. tonight to speak at the meeting.
Yep.
And I think one thing, if you have a look at the agenda, and you can Google that now, or we'll post a link to it. You'll see that the officer recommendations, present an interesting take on what was provided for the consultation. So there's been a change. There just seems to be several contradictions between the information presented in the consultation and the recommendations that would lead to, and then what is now being recommended by officers in the report. So it's really important that you speak at the meeting on Tuesday. You can register up until 6 p.m. tonight, and we'll post a link to it. But if in the meantime you'd like to Google it, you could have a look at the Say Yes to a New Wellington Street page, where there's a really good explainer.
Yep.
And also an explainer of what's involved in speaking at a meeting. And, you know, you get 2 minutes to speak. It doesn't mean you have to speak for 2 whole minutes.
Yep.
It just breaks it down to make it really easy and accessible. And a really good explainer through the consultation and the new officer's report. So really important to have a look at that. It's one of those consultations that has ended up being split pretty much close to 50-50,
yep.
Which is never good.
Yeah.
And very difficult to find a resolution that anyone's going to be happy with.
And it's not an easy, I wouldn't imagine, it's not an easy design, I wouldn't think.
I think it's fairly, we've done it a lot yep. before. You know, if you look at anyone on Napier Street or Canning Street yes. and you went to them and said, would you like us to reopen this street? We're going to reopen the street to traffic, and yeah. so that we can get some of the traffic off Hoddle or off Nicholson
yeah.
and just create a bit more space, residents would be up in arms
yep.
at the idea. I mean, it you know, creating these really beautiful streets to live on that still allow people to move around. Residents can get in and out to their houses by whatever mode yeah, they yeah. choose. People can walk, people can ride. Often there's also public transport for some of it. It's not a difficult
yeah.
thing. It's we've been doing it for decades.
Yep.
And, it's interesting that it gets caught up in so much additional baggage.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
Yep. I didn't write down Alison McCormack's comment on the Yarra Council from the Bicycle Network's page, but a little bit of the assertion is that you're not sure what you're going to get. Everything's actually in limbo about things now, which doesn't give anybody direction at all.
Well, and these are, like Wellington Street's an example, these aren't new ideas. This is a very long-term plan that's been in motion for 20, a long time.
20 years or
and,
so.
And this is potentially the least controversial part of it.
Oh, no.
And it seems very strange that it should be wrapped up in all this additional baggage at this point.
Yep. And something we'll pass over pretty quickly. The regulations for Queensland's reform of the e-bike situation in Queensland, I think, comes up this week. I'm not 100% sure. They're actually still changing it as we speak. So I think we'll just wait and see what happens. There are some funny things in those regulations.
Well, and going through the inquiry, yep. It'll be interesting to see, you know, already some thing, as you said, ideas have changed.
Yep.
To slightly more sensible.
Workable.
Yes. Yep. But it's a very strange way to address it, a bit out of step with all the other states.
Yep.
And it does seem odd that at a time where the federal government is looking at the regulations governing imports, so that's in progress.
Yep.
And that you wouldn't be sort of consulting with other states and the federal government to land in something
somewhere.
That's going to provide a bit of consistency
yep.
and reliability for people to know where they stand.
Yeah.
A lot
yeah.
of people particularly, we saw this in Victoria with the proposal to ban e-bikes from trains. You know, a lot of people have invested what for them is often a significant sum of money in a EU-compliant e-bike to provide them with mobility either as they're ageing or because of they have a disability or a medical yep. condition. This is a big decision. And to then suddenly find out that even though you've gone to the trouble of finding a quality EU-compliant e-bike, you're suddenly going to be hit with all these over-regulation.
Yeah.
Many people who use e-bikes are people who, for various reasons, cannot get a license.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the examples, there's medical conditions that prevent you from having a license. And, you know, as you develop other conditions as you age. So, you know, these aren't decisions people make lightly. E-bikes are often quite expensive, and people put a lot of thought and care into buying them. And they're going to be impacted, you know, and the people riding the electric motorbikes, the unregulated electric motorbikes, a significant portion of those are probably not going to be worried by what's legal and illegal.
No.
They're not going to change their behaviour. So, no.
And the fact that I bought it legally, you know, is obvious. I mean, you know, it's a leg for people to say, what are you talking about? I shouldn't have been able to buy it if you don't want me to ride it.
Yeah.
That's part of it. The other part about it too is, look, with that, the Queensland thing hasn't gone through, but this idea that a food delivery person needs a valid learner's permit to ride an e-bike. You know, there are a lot of people who are not interested in having car licences.
Well, and I mean, I think it's a really easy target. People love to order food online and have it delivered, but they love to turn around and have a go at delivery riders.
Okay.
And you know, huge numbers of them are earning very low wages in poor conditions, international students or residents there. You know, it's...
It's a terror. It's a, you know, anyway. Hey, listen, it's about the news. We're going to take this message from Bicycle Network, and we'll be back straight after this.
Yarrabug would like to thank Bicycle Network for their financial support. Bicycle Network, a not-for-profit with 45,000 members, working to get more people riding for their health and well-being. Bicycle Network is proud to sponsor the Yarrabug program and support its important advocacy for safer and more accessible riding. By becoming a Bicycle Network member and or participating in one of their iconic riding events, you're supporting Bicycle Network's ride to school programs and advocacy campaigns to make it easier for everyone to ride a bike every day. Visit bicyclenetwork.com.au for more information.
And you're back listening to the Yarrabug Radio Show with Val and Faith. I had thought we should take a look at the state budget that was released last Tuesday, and particularly at what is in it for active transport. Mm. But, you know, it didn't take long to realise that would be a fairly short conversation. Because if we thought it was bad in other years, it's significantly worse. There's some good things for public transport, great outcomes for buses, and as Peter Parker often points out, improving services on existing bus routes is a great and cheap way to improve transport accessibility for lots of people. There will be some ongoing active transport paths that improve things for cyclists associated with level crossing removals that are going ahead or some of the other big projects, even though that is a much smaller portion of the budget than in previous years. And that's great. That gives us some great outcomes. We've seen like the Dixon Veloway and St Kilda Road protected bike lanes, and then there's others in different areas which add in a piecemeal way to the network. Important often.
Yeah.
But what I mean, there's very, very, very little for active transport. There's $3.5 million for strategic cycling network. So that's the strategic cycling work for the entire state of Victoria.
How much?
$3.5 million, which is...
Oh, no.
you know, I mean, we're doing one corridor in Merribeck. The council are doing on Victoria Street. Maybe it's 2 kilometres long, and that budget for that is $2 million.
Yeah.
So $3.5 million across the state of Victoria is, you know.
I saw in the active transport, remember when they put up the active transport plan, something like only $15 million for upkeep and improvement of over the next 4 years. Mm. Anyway, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have brought that up. Well, I mean, I looked at the number, went back and had to double check it twice, and I thought, no, that's got to be wrong. Not per year, you know.
And one thing I thought was interesting was the budget does provide a gender lens, which is a great document to examine the budget in terms of through a gender lens.
Yep.
Because it does force you to look a little bit more critically at who is impacted by these decisions and who is seeing the benefit. And, you know, there's some discussion about the fact that reducing the cost of car registration and
halving the excise.
Measures like that are
making
making transport accessibility better and for women. But I think it's well known that women are less likely to have access to a car to use. If you're looking at people on incomes that rule out owning and keeping and using a car, women are overrepresented in those categories. So making car use cheaper in a temporary way isn't really, through that gender lens, helping. The improvements to bus networks will. Public transport is a big part of improving access to transport for women. Single women households are the least likely to purchase a car, and that's because they're generally on lower incomes. Yep. And, of course, we all know exceptions to that, but the general rule applies. Women, particularly those who are looking after kids or others, are more susceptible to transport disadvantage due to lower access to private vehicles in suburban areas. And so once you get into those suburban areas, the need for a car to access the public transport becomes greater and greater. And then you can say, well, let's look at our cycling network and who does that privilege in the way it's currently laid out and planned.
Yep.
Overall, men tend to make longer direct single chain trip commutes. And a lot of our cycling network, just like the rest of the network, is for transport, is planned in that way. We focus on commuter routes in and out of the city or big centres. Whereas women are often undertaking more complex, shorter journeys with multiple stops where they're involving childcare, shopping and caregiving. So they don't have those direct work commutes. They're travelling at different times of the day. So, for instance, if you have clear ways at a particular time that create a bike lane on a road, that privileges people who are only who you're assuming are working 9 to 5.
Yeah.
You know, whereas if you're coming through at 10 because you've had to drop off the kids and do a few other things and you're working part-time or a different time of hours, you don't get to use that.
No.
We also know, and we've discussed that a lot here, that women much prefer routes where they're not having to travel in traffic.
Yep.
So protected bike lanes or paths that are away from traffic. And that is and remains what's missing most of all from our network.
Yeah.
And what is definitely not in this budget. You know, $3.5 million for the strategic cycling network does not allow you to build a significant part of that network or of any routes with protected bike lanes.
And I know something you've brought up before, the whole lighting aspect on some things, and as we know, I think the campaign to get that upway path sufficient lighting, you know, it just takes, you know, that's a real, you have to apply a lot of pressure over a long period of time to get it changed.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, that high, wanting that higher quality infrastructure, it's not even just a personal preference. It's about the fact that you might be carrying children on your bike. And
you're not going the same speed as everybody else. You're not, this is not a, you know, as we've all spoken over many, many years, this break between, you know, somebody says, oh, I can ride on the road. You know, that whole, there's one side of it. And then the other side is you actually, a lot of these things, I don't think in their design, don't even recognise that there's a different way of doing it.
Well, and that's the point that, for example, Monash Uni have been bringing up, and Dr. Pearson, with recognising that there's in the past been an inherent bias in what was designed that privileged certain trips over others.
Yeah.
And then what happens, of course, is the other trips aren't made. So then it's, you end up with a situation we have in some areas of Melbourne where women are a third or less of the people using a bike. And when you consider what an accessible, cheap and reliable form of transport a bicycle can be, then what you can see is that you have people who are more likely to be less able to use a private car, but also less likely to have access to these other modes because they involve travelling in the dark to a gloomy bus stop or riding on an arterial road with a 60k speed limit or, you know,
or the last 2 kilometres of the ride, of the not ride is, or the transport is either on foot through dark areas.
Yeah. So I've found it interesting that the budget, they have produced this gender lens document, which I recommend you have a look at. It's on the front page of the State Budget Papers website. And they do actually apply some of it to transport, but there's no mention of the active transport component and how that is viewed when you apply a gender lens. So it seems like a very selective lens. Maybe rose-coloured glasses would be...
Well, look, without... reading through the active transport plan, from what I can remember, I mean, speaking of things that actually is not then reflected in the budget or
No, there's nothing in the budget to support a lot of the things they're saying they're going to do in the active
transport plan. It is. I'm being a little bit sarcastic here. It looks like a wellness document. You know what I mean? We've been trying to get people to get active for a long, long time. I don't think, well, you know, I shouldn't say be so certain about things. It's an acknowledgement of something, but without anything to actually fundamentally look at some of the reasons why those things happen, like the gender split. You know, how do we actually, you know, it's all right, I know we can acknowledge and highlight it. The trick then is actually doing something.
Yeah, well, it has to be funded. And the Active Transport Plan does clearly recognise that, you know, acknowledge the research on women and how they prefer to get around, but there has to be someone to provide funding to do that plan out. I mean, the government has a goal of 25% of trips being made by active transport by 2030, which is now not 3.5 years away.
Yeah, which it's, you know, maybe it's after my next birthday, but not long. You know? Oh, look, it's, and I can, you know, there's obviously politics and policy that's wrong. Look, I was struck by how often they pointed out the problems. I mean, they did a really good part of the active transport thing was a nice breakdown on trip distances, you know, 63% under a kilometre, and actually in the breakdown highlighted the fact that people who small commutes are not looked after, and that was there in their figures, but then they don't say anything about it. But they're lovely diagrams and a beautiful layout. I am being a bit sceptical about it, but it's really, I found that disappointing that you could actually write a document highlighting things in your figures and data, but then not reflected in actual... I mean, they've got KPIs in there. They don't really even put a number on them.
Yes. Well, it's who decides the budget. That's the issue.
The voters. Which will be terrible, but I think, Faith, that's about all
that's
we've
all
got
we have time for today.
Yep.
Coming up next is...
Lost in Science, which should be... I am lost in science.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.